Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 269.
This week on the podcast, for once, the House passed a bill that's moderately more tolerable than the Senate's version.
And the Senate tax bill finally does something for the private jet-owning community.
Plus, despite new entries, Roy Moore holds on to the number one spot as the grossest harasser in the Senate pool.
And Kirsten Gillibrand literally thinks she's God right now. Let's hope she's right.
Plus, Alabama playing out just as predicted.
And Trump nominates an amateur ghost hunter to protect the Constitution. Because, yeah, we don't know.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Leave us a review.
Yeah.
Give us 5 stars. Or one, I mean, do whatever you're going to do.
Yeah.
But like, leave us a thing.
Something. Yeah.
That can be your Thanksgiving present to us.
Yes.
So this week we have tax bill updates.
Yes.
Which are exciting in their lack of being exciting.
Right. Well, the House passed theirs.
That's
long
right.
Party lines. Go figure.
Yeah.
Because that's
the
what
House
they do.
The House is great at passing things because they have a clear majority of
they do.
Ridiculous people.
Right. They do have, you know, 20 or so crazies, as right? we've told you about many times, the Freedom Caucus.
Sure.
But, you know, they can pretty much all rally behind some
tax cuts
that add trillions of dollars to the deficit.
Yeah,
like, that's what they're into.
A special
especially if they're for rich people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a special up there.
So they passed theirs, but potential problem that they're running into is that the Senate hasn't passed theirs yet, and there's some issues there.
And in surprising issues, because the Senate bill is actually crazier than the House is.
Yeah, it's crazier.
Because, and I was listening to someone talk about this, because the Senate, because they represent whole states, has a lot less incentive to consider some of the things that are going to be bad for people who live in big states who are in Republican districts.
Right, exactly.
So, like, you know, Daryl Issa lives right. in a state where we're going to see huge tax increases. So, like,
right.
can he, as a person who lives in California or represents California, say that he's in favor of getting rid of the state and local tax deduction?
Right.
No. I mean, he tried and he
sure.
failed because he
yeah.
was ultimately forced to reverse his position on that.
Yeah.
In the Senate, if you represent a red state, generally it's a whole red state and, you know,
well, right.
you don't have the same. So the red states often are the states that don't have the highest taxes locally because they
right.
also vote for Republicans in their
correct.
State government.
Yes.
So, so the House really had to be a little bit more thoughtful almost about, I mean, not obviously their bill is crazy and adds tons of money to
right,
the deficit.
Exactly.
I'm
it's
not suggesting
no,
that.
What
I am suggesting is they weren't able to do some of the nonsense that's shady that the Senate's trying to do that is making it difficult for them.
Yes.
And that includes the Senate is trying to add an ACA repeal,
yeah.
which is crazy because I think the House probably didn't do that because they thought it wouldn't get through the Senate.
Right. Well, and also it was like a classic sort of like Trumpian thing to do, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit. But he tweeted on Monday that the Senate should add that. I mean, the House
yeah.
was already debating
yeah.
theirs. So, because they passed it on Thursday. So it was like, you know, leave it to him to sort of like, you know, throw out some like harebrained policy idea via Twitter, like while he's in China, you know.
Yeah.
And then so like basically like Senate leadership is like scrambling to like, you know, figure out how they can repeal Obamacare and a tax bill. So it's like he's not helping.
No.
Go figure. Because he's never helping.
I still maintain my original theory, which is that they added that because they didn't have the votes for the actual tax bill and they
well,
were trying to cover that up.
It appeared as though that may be the case. And we're going to get
yeah,
that in
I'm
a little.
I'm a genius.
Right, exactly. Yes.
I've been saying
that
all week to people and they've been like, you're nuts.
Yeah.
And I've been like, why would they add this thing that they know can't pass
right.
if they can't already pass
right,
the bill?
Exactly.
You don't add a surefire loser
no,
to a thing
you,
that's
you
winning.
Told me that and I was like, that makes perfect sense because then you can just blame it on the people
yes.
that you've been blaming everything on
there's
already
new,
anyway.
There's
you
no
can,
new blame.
Right, I know. You know, the Republican coworker that I have has been railing on Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski for the last, you know, 9 months. And he can continue to do
exactly.
so if they derail this tax bill because the Obamacare repeal is
no, I mean,
there.
It's a surefire strategy right. to lose at something while not changing anything.
right, exactly. Yeah.
So this bill did, it got out of the Finance Committee on party lines also, 14
course.
To 12.
Yeah.
And they're going to consider it after Thanksgiving, but
right.
we're not really sure yet whether it has enough support to pass. As we've stated,
right.
because of some of, you know, it not only does it repeal the Obamacare mandate,
right.
and we have talked at length about why that's a terrible idea, but it also includes some other things that openly favor rich people and openly don't favor not rich
right.
people.
And things that, I mean, I fear that they will fix and then probably pass it, but things that seem like so stupid.
So
that,
dumb.
Like, make me really question all of their sanity, but I was questioning it anyway.
If
but,
you're
I
trying
mean,
to pass a bill that looks like it's tax cuts for all Americans.
Yeah.
One area to just stay out of, to not wade into it all, is the private jet owning community's tax liability.
That's right.
Because under this bill, finally, all your friends and family that own private jets will they'll finally get a tax cut.
That's right.
They're definitely not going to get, they're definitely not already in the 1%, the top 1%, and going to get massive cuts anyway. But
because right now they're paying taxes on the planes, on the storage of the planes, on the maintenance of the planes, on the fueling of the planes, and they shouldn't have to be doing that.
No, of course not. They worked hard for those private jets.
That's right.
They should get them tax-free.
That's right.
In fact, we should subsidize them having private jets.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds right.
Yeah.
So, of all things that this bill, like, you know, anytime you have a bill like this, people find little things that are stupid they should have caught, but it's a 500-page bill, so how could they have caught that make it look like it's openly for the the top 1%?
Yeah.
And this bill,
which it is,
is and but shares like, those problems.
But leave out those things, because it can still be for the top 1% without this.
You know, like, finally, I mean, just sparkling wine producers and importers are going to get the same tax credits that wineries receive.
And now,
finally. How many times have we had to talk about the poor sparkling wine producers and importers?
Now, I'm going to say something controversial here.
Ooh.
If they get a tax break, can I get a break on the cost of the excess amounts of champagne that I'm often drinking?
I believe that that will not end up transferring down to you.
Damn it.
I mean,
that'll transfer to profit for them, won't it?
Yeah. All right, that's fine, how these things work.
All right.
We're not fools, winery people.
Right. Yeah. I know. I almost just came out in favor of some sort of voodoo economics that I know doesn't work, right?
Just, we're just like,
just when
lower
presented,
our taxes on wine.
Just when presented with cheap champagne. That's all it took for me.
No, it was easy.
God.
That's how they get you. Right?
I know.
This
I'm
is
an
how
easy
they get.
Get
you.
Yikes.
It also, there are income tax rates rate cuts, obviously. There is an expanded child tax credit. And there, so these are some of the changes that are for regular people. There's, you know, there are cuts to most of the tax brackets.
Yeah.
The thing is, those all expire in 2025.
Right.
But you know what doesn't expire in 2025 and has a shelf life of forever?
Right.
The corporate tax rate cut.
That so, is so ridiculous. There's literally in the some tax policy center or whatever, like, who releases studies on this stuff or whatever, like, released a graph. And, like, it is true that every income bracket does get a tax cut. Now, there are certain people who, for whatever reason, are maybe going to see the tax cut.
Living in high tax states.
Right. But if, yes, exactly. But if you look at this graph, like, up until, like, starting at, like, 2021 or 2022, everybody's getting a tax break.
Right.
But then you start seeing people who are making less than $100,000, their taxes start going up. And then the year after that, they start going up further. And by 2027, the only people who are paying taxes are people who are making less than like $125,000. Yeah. Which is like, huh?
The other thing that I always feel like is stupid about this is the corporate tax, like rich people will always be in charge. So they don't have to extend their tax cuts forever. Because they will always people to extend them
to
for them.
To extend the tax cuts, right, exactly.
It just, it doesn't make sense to put that into the bill for political reasons, because then you look like an asshole and maybe rich people won't be in charge forever.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that it does, and this, you might think to yourself, well, this doesn't really affect that many people, so, like, maybe I just sort of don't care about this, but, like, let us explain
it affects
it
a lot
you.
Of because dollars.
It affects a lot of affects a lot of dollars, because the estate tax, or the death tax, as Republicans like to refer to it, currently only people are only taxed on assets that they leave behind after they die. If for a single person of $5.5 million or a couple of $11 million, the Senate wants to double those amounts.
Right.
So that is only actually going to affect 0.2 of the population. So you might say, well, that's not very much. But because these people have
people who have more wealth than all of us combined.
So much more wealth, just doubling that amount that they're going to tax is going to add $151 billion to the deficit. Like, that's $151 billion of tax revenue that we're not going to get.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money that is only going to the top 0.2%.
Yeah, and it's only going to people who have plenty to live on.
Obviously.
And also didn't even work for it, because
that's
it's inheritance assets.
Yeah.
These are not the people that worked hard to build the wealth, you guys. This is their children.
Yeah, exactly. And you know who these people
are. Who are getting $5.5 million tax-free already.
And while that might only be 0.2% of all taxpayers in the country, it's basically like 100% of Trump's cabinet.
I believe that it will affect everyone in Trump's cabinet except Mike Pence.
Right.
Who's oddly poor in the cabinet scheme of things.
Yes. Steve Mnuchin, Wilbur Ross, Rex Tillerson, Betsy DeVos, Elaine Chao, Ben Carson, Sonny Perdue, Gary Cohn, Trump himself, obviously, are all going to benefit from all of these things.
And this also, Elaine Chao being able to benefit from it means Mitch McConnell will benefit because they're married.
Of course they're
married. So, yeah. I mean, this extends into other chambers as well. But this, we're talking about them passing a tax bill that's just like personally for themselves.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Here are some of the other ways that the poor lose. Because we have gone through a few of those.
Yeah.
But essentially, so this tax bill is going to basically end up affecting the lowest earners the most over time and the highest earners the least.
Yes.
So if you look beyond 2021, at first households making under $30,000 are going to see their taxes go a little down. They're lower a little down. I can't speak English anymore. But by 2021, they're going to start to creep up. And after 2021, they're going to keep creeping up. And if you look beyond 2025, they're going to be paying more in taxes than they would have paid if we just did nothing.
Correct. Yes.
So they're not getting a tax cut, you guys. This bill is a tax increase bill for them.
Yes.
Because taxes we pay every year. So it's not just enough that by 2021, everyone's taxes are the same.
Yeah. And so they also looked at what the impact of the Affordable Care individual mandate was going to do. Getting rid of it. And while, that's basically going to allow low-income households to choose not to buy insurance.
Right.
So then they're not going to have insurance. But also, they're basically getting rid of the tax breaks and the tax credits that would cover them being able to.
Right, because here's the thing. If you make under $30,000 a year, you are basically able to get healthcare for free.
Pretty much.
We subsidize your care.
Right.
In a pretty generous way, as we should.
Yeah.
Because it's like $1 million a month to get healthcare.
That's right.
So that means that not only, if you choose not to buy care, you don't pay a tax penalty in this if we get rid of the mandate.
Right.
But you also lose access to the significantly higher sum that you would get in subsidies to actually have health care, which then will prevent you from going into massive personal debt over a health crisis.
Right.
So in many ways, just that act alone is a huge tax increase on just the poorest Americans.
Yeah.
Because again, if you make $65,000 a year and you live by yourself, you don't get these tax, these subsidies anyway.
Right.
So this won't affect you,
right,
but it will affect your friends and family that make under $30,000 a year, who most certainly get massive tax subsidies in order to pay for their health care, as they should.
You're right.
And they suddenly not only, they don't have to pay a tax penalty to not have what is almost free care,
right,
but they also lose health care.
They will lose health care.
And remember, that used to be the leading source of bankruptcy in the United States.
Yes.
It's still an enormous source of, it's still a high source, a large source of bankruptcy for individuals, but not nearly as bad as it was before we had the ACA.
Right.
And we're just going to waltz back into those days.
Yeah. Well, that's what they've been wanting to do.
Where all of our roads are paid for by poor people and none of them have health care.
Right. Yes, exactly. Oh, boy.
And that, in some ways, makes this tax debate a death panel.
It really does.
Doesn't it?
God, that was good. I could tell from your face as you said that, you just thought of that.
I did
and
just
also
think of it.
Realized how genius it was as you were saying it.
It was a great moment
for
me.
Which I appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It was a good moment. in any case, because of all of these things, and also because of some of the opposites of these things.
Well, right.
Certain members of the Republican Party are still not fully convinced. Now, you might not be surprised to hear some of the names, like Susan Collins,
like
Lisa Murkowski, John McCain. These are all people that have kind of played fast and loose with their decisions on stuff like this in the past. Ron Johnson was a surprise.
The first person who came out publicly against this was Ron Johnson. And for reasons that, ultimately, once we dug into it, made perfect sense.
Yeah.
But at least initially,
seemed confusing.
It seemed like we were in the upside down world.
Yeah.
Like, because he came out against it because he said it too heavily favored large corporations.
Those are his people.
Huh?
He loves large corporations.
What?
He's voting to favor them all the time. Here's the thing.
What it turns out is that it doesn't favor, those aren't his people, because his people
are
smaller, what they call
business people.
Pass-through businesses,
yep,
which is what his family runs. His family runs a plastics business, and they're not getting enough of a tax.
Yeah, because, one of the reasons that this bill is actually not that beneficial for most people is that if you work on a 1099 basis, if you own a small business, you pay your business taxes as an individual. So, write stuff on the side. I make 1099 income from writing that stuff. That means that it's not taxed.
Right.
So I get
so
the
you're
whole
a small,
sum.
It's you're technically a small business, but it's your personal, it's
just
your Lila Nordstrom
from the business.
Right.
But because of that, when I go to pay my taxes, that income comes into my, is counted as my personal income. It's not counted as business income that's separate and pays a corporate tax rate.
Yeah.
It's taxed at the same rate as my personal income.
Right.
That's what happens with pass-through businesses.
Right.
So if you run a small business, all of that profit gets treated as income. personal income.
Yeah.
And because of that, the personal income tax rate is actually significantly more important to most small businesses.
Correct.
And medium-sized businesses than the corporate tax rate.
Right. Then bringing down the corporate rate from, you know, 36 to 20 or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Their plan is. Right.
So, like Ron Johnson, many of us who technically run small businesses would not benefit from this tax bill because it only favors giant corporations because the corporate tax rate is not relevant to me because I'm not a corporation.
Correct. Yeah. But this sort of opened up an interesting little schism between he and Paul Ryan because
his BFF.
Right, because they're both from Wisconsin, and Paul Ryan really helped Ron Johnson sort of ascend to his Senate seat, actually, and then also in his re-election campaign in 2016.
His campaign.
And so it has sort of put those two at odds with each other, but it is also sort of like put into, you know, we now sort of like see some of the issues that are, you know, appearing as this thing sort of moves forward, and they're supposed to be voting on it this week.
I know.
So, or no, no excuse
they're
me, the week, the week after
supposed to be
Thanksgiving.
The week after Thanksgiving. We have a week, you guys.
Yeah, well, they're much like most of America, they're probably not doing much work this week.
No.
if I had to guess
whether they're already on recess, I would not have to guess because I would know the answer.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, this is an interesting, and this is, in some ways, this has created a problem that's similar to what the House often experiences with the Freedom Caucus, where satisfying the different constituencies within the Republican Party is becoming untenable in the Senate.
Exactly.
And that's because, on the one hand, they're trying to repeal Obamacare. And you know, there's sort of the people who can't, in good conscience, you know, Susan Collins cannot vote to repeal Obamacare. Her state just expanded Medicaid.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Like, she knows where she lives.
Right.
And then on the other hand, you have people who are like, no, I'm a Republican because I think small businesses should have tax cuts.
Right, exactly.
I want everyone to have tax cuts, not just corporations. And,
well, and
those people are not satisfied by this bill, as they shouldn't be, because it doesn't do anything for those.
Well, and, you know, it's much like healthcare, you know, turns out taxes are hard. Because once you start to give sort of like handouts to one group, it sort of like starts to affect other groups because, you know, you, as soon as, okay, so let's say the Senate decides to sort of, you know, bring down the rate for these pass-through entities at the same rate that they are doing with these large corporations.
Who's gonna pay the difference?
Well, right, exactly. Then that's just adding further to the deficit, and the other group, or one of the other groups of people who don't particularly care for this bill, like Bob Corker, he's a deficit hawk.
Exactly.
So then you're adding, you know, if you start to bring down their tax rates as well, then you're adding more to the deficit. So then you've got Ron Johnson's vote back, but then all of the people who are like, no, we can't add $100 trillion to the deficit.
Exactly. And I would guess it's not just Bob Corker. I'm going to guess that James Lankford,
who's
an Oklahoma
also
senator,
said
that we
he took
what's his face's seat.
Oh, sure, yeah,
Coburn,
one of the guys.
Didn't he take Coburn's
seat? Oh, yeah.
Based on my knowledge of Coburn, I would guess that's also his game, because that was Coburn's game. Coburn is sort of famous for trying to cut all the spending of everything, including things that have nothing to do with him, just because he can be a decisive vote. He could be a decisive vote. So I would guess that they have at least three deficit hawks, because Jeff Flake is also undecided.
Yes,
I would guess that they have at least three healthcare hawks, because Collins, Murkowski, and McCain are all kind of playing fast and loose with the excitement.
Right.
And
and McCain is sort of just like a more, than healthcare, he's like a regular order hawk, and this is not that.
No, exactly. And then you have Ron Johnson, who's wondering why he can't get the tax cuts that his plastics company can't get the tax cuts that large corporations can get. They need three no's, and currently they have about seven people circling no, and they're basically, to get three, they have to lose three.
Right.
So this is a shitty situation for them to be in.
Yeah.
And also, they did it to themselves, so I'm not sorry.
Well, they did do it to themselves. Yeah. And the one thing that is not being talked about much here, because you've got seven Republicans who might be willing to vote no on it. Supposedly, there were early rumblings, and actually even sort of recent rumblings, that they might be able to swing a sort of Heidi Heitkamp / Joe Manchin type of person, and that clearly is not happening.
Not
now, granted, they've been quiet. They haven't been saying much of anything, but like, you're not going to find them voting for this.
No.
Wacko,
not with
crazy
seven
nonsense.
Republicans being
and with an Obamacare repeal in there.
No.
Like, that's just not, they're not.
That's why I say there is no world in which, like, they whip votes for a living. They have a guy whose job it is to whip votes. Like, that's what, there's a senator whose whole job is to find out who's voting for
him. Obviously having,
they
he's
know
bad
who's,
at, theirs must be bad
theirs
at math.
Is bad. But they know who's voting, who's leaning towards what.
Right.
If there were rumblings.
And you know why certain people are leaning in what direction. So it's like, you know, like, maybe don't put the Obamacare repeal in there.
If there are rumblings that Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp might vote for your dumb tax bill,
yeah,
then you know that by putting that Obamacare repeal in, that they, that you have gotten rid of those votes.
Yes.
Like, you know that there are certain lines that these people are not going to cross.
Right.
If you add an Obamacare repeal, you lose Collins, Murkowski, and McCain.
Yeah.
And I know that McCain would ultimately love to get rid of everything.
Sure.
But McCain basically is the guy right now who is stopping Obamacare from being repealed.
Well,
he's not going to be able to vote for this bill.
Well, and McCain, and the thing that McCain has been so against is that...
is bullshit order.
Bullshit order, right. And he even said the reason that he... and he hasn't said that he's necessarily a solid no on this, but what he did say was that he... he, you know, he was excited that they were taking another step or a step forward and provided much needed tax relief. But he said,
those were his words, not Brent's.
Right. Yeah,
Brent doesn't talk like that.
But no, I don't. But he said that
he wants plenty of time to offer amendments.
Plenty of time to offer amendments when the plan reaches the Senate floor. And guess what? He's not going to get it.
No.
Because they're desperate to pass this before the end of the year. So it looks like they did something.
Well, and also they can't offer the amendments because then they have to go on the record voting on a bunch of bullshit.
Well, right.
Like, that's the things that he wants are the very things they can't consider this more carefully than they're considering it, because then they'll find out it's terrible.
Right, exactly.
They can't offer amendments because they're all
that's the longer America sits with this, the worse it gets.
If they can sneak Obamacare repeals into these tax bills on reconciliation, you know, on a reconciliation bill, they can be forced to vote on a zillion tiny amendments that have to do with the Obamacare tax related code that will make them all look like horrible assholes.
Yeah.
They're going to have to vote against money for the opioid crisis, which they've done recently. My mom, on she had visited, as you know, last week, and was on the plane home just watching C-SPAN for like hours because she, I don't know, didn't have enough to do. And she was like, Lila, it was fascinating. I watched them all take these vote, like I watched them all vote against opioid funding. I watched them, like I watched the Republicans with their heads hung have to take votes that they knew were destructive to their careers.
Right.
As the Democrats casually waltzed in and voted yes. Like, she was like, if people were watching C-SPAN, they would see how ashamed everyone in the Senate is, as they should be.
Right.
But she was like, it was great theater, which is not usually.
Right.
We're no Britain, you know?
No.
Normally, Congress...
no, we don't have to get
pretty dull.
Shout at each other.
No. But yeah, it is interesting to watch some of these behind the scenes votes that they're not behind the scenes, they're on C-SPAN, but like that no one's really paying attention to, because this is what they want to avoid, is having to all hang their heads low to vote against what would add even more to the deficit,
right,
but is the things that their is the thing their constituents want.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh boy. Yeah.
In any case, the White House is trying to help.
Right.
After they've ruined everything.
After they ruined everything, right, exactly. Because a lot of people think that Obamacare repeal is going to come out of that. It has to for them to have any prayer of passing it. They've got other work to do to pass it. But that is step one, certainly. But after the White House was the one who demanded that they put it in there by tweet from Asia.
Right.
They're out there and they're reminding everyone that they're fine if they take it out.
Yeah.
It's okay. If it's going to be an impediment to them actually passing the bill, then there's no need to have it in there in the first place.
Mick Mulvaney was walking around on Sunday, just telling anyone who would listen that, we'd love it if it was in there, but it's cool. I mean, if they have to remove it, we'll live.
And this is hilarious for two reasons. Because one, it's an impediment.
Like, come on.
Come
on.
For the reasons that we have just told you why. Of course it is. But also,
it was their idea.
You came up with this.
Here's the tweet, by the way, from Monday. Because in case you were wondering what the tweet said and what happened in a world where the Twitter character limit doubled.
Right, I know.
It's a lot more of Trump.
Yeah.
I am proud of the Republican House and Senate for working hard on cutting taxes and reform. We're getting close. Now, how about ending the unfair and highly unpopular individual mandate on Obamacare and reducing taxes even further? Cut top rate to 35% with all the rest going to the middle income cuts. Not sure what that means.
No, I don't either.
But what I do know, aside from the fact that the REP period is supposed to represent representative and not Republican. He does that all the time and it drives me fucking nuts.
Right.
You know, if you, Representative Adam Schiff, you would write that REP.Schiff.
Oh, yeah.
Representative Schiff.
Yeah.
He's not a Republican.
No, he's not.
You know, you write Repub for Republican or GOP. Like, get a life.
Ugh,
in any case, so it's all well and good with the White House to undo the mess that they created in the first place if we feel like it.
Right.
So don't worry about it, guys.
Oh boy.
But now, like, this is strategically, this I think is a hilarious issue because, I mean, a hilarious thing to do because they, in coming forward with this dumb policy, opened the door for all these other people to come out against it.
Yeah.
Because they knew it wouldn't pass.
Yeah.
So like a Ron Johnson and a Jeff Flake and all these people, the reason that they were comfortable coming out against it was because they knew it couldn't pass.
Right, exactly. As it was.
Exactly.
So then all they get, that it just allows them to voice their opinions on what they would like to change, which they probably wouldn't have, they probably would have just sucked it up. Yeah,
they've been sucking it up this whole time. Why would they change now? But that's, it's like bonkers town to me that this kind of dumb misstep was made.
Yeah, Ron Johnson thought to himself, well, if Collins, Murkowski, and McCain are going to kill this thing anyway, I might as well get some money for my plastics company.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, that's...
Well, and also, I'm going to be a hero to a bunch of deficit hawks who can vote for me.
Yeah.
Like, But I think that, and I also think that they didn't have the votes anyway, because I don't think they would have put it in if they did.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Al Franken. Oh, wait, before we go on,
we
forgot to remind you that Puerto Rico has no power.
Oh, God. Oh, shit.
We were going to we were going to put that at the top, but we forgot.
I know. And, oh, I told you, I was texting you this week. I was, you know, I'm still a Project Runway watcher.
Obviously.
You know, 20 years later, however long it's been. Probably that long.
No one knows why, but...
I know. But one of the contestants was from Puerto Rico this year, and they were, she was in the finale, and, like, they were trying to get her family there, because the family always comes to the final runway show, and it was, like, as the hurricane was hitting.
Ooh.
And she was, like, they're saying that they might not be able to get power back there for, like, 4 months, and this was probably in the summer, I guess it would have been. And, like, everybody on the show, like, the other contestants, looked at her as if she had two heads.
Yeah.
Well.
And yet, here we are.
Here we are.
People who know that Puerto Rico still has no power.
Right. Mid-December.
Mid-December.
Yep. Still Where's working for Christmas that Christmas miracle. Present.
Yeah.
Yikes.
In any case, let's talk about sexual harassment.
Yeah.
So, this week was real exciting because Democrats got in on the game.
They really did. Yeah.
As you might not be surprised to find...
Yeah. Our comedian senator.
Our comedian senator
was the one who was
has groped women before. a radio host named Leanne Tweeden wrote a story about how Al Franken forced himself on her while they were at a USO tour in 2006.
Yes.
And there's also a photo that's pretty gross of him like groping her while she's asleep.
Looking really proud of himself while she's asleep. Yeah.
It's a classic comedian move.
Oh boy. Yes.
If we've learned anything from the Louis C.K. situation.
That's right. Yeah.
Here's what we're going to say about this, because as much as, obviously, Al Franken should be forced to confront this behavior, he should be forced to apologize for this behavior, and he should be forced to live with the fact that he did this and consider how in the future he can avoid doing this.
And all of those things are things that I feel like he may have already done just within the last 72 hours.
He is maybe one of the only people who got his apology right. Yes, on the second try.
Yes.
But he tried again.
Right.
He didn't get it right the first time, and he re-apologized in a more expansive way.
I think he would have tried until he got it right, too.
Yes, agreed.
If the second one wasn't good, the third one would have been better.
Yeah. And so there's that. There's also the fact that, well, Trump is now tweeting about him calling him Al Frankenstein, but also misspelling Frankenstein, obviously. Yeah. He tweeted, "The Al Frankenstein picture is really bad. Speaks 1,000 words. Where did his hands go in pictures 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 while she sleeps?" Mm. Now, this is a man who has admitted on a live mic that he likes to grab women by the pussy.
Yeah,
that's just
right.
a reminder to you.
Yeah.
But also,
and forces himself on them and kissing them, which is what apparently Al Franken did.
Exactly.
So they literally are in favor of the same thing.
Right.
In terms of...
Their behavior, quite similar, except that Al Franken was never dumb enough to be caught on a hot mic talking about grabbing women by the pussy.
Right.
Never mind. Here's, now obviously, this, for some reason, this has blown up in a way that is way out of the sort of scheme of what the Roy Moore situation blew up to
be. Right, but it makes perfect sense in the sense that it gave Republicans a chance to, now they could talk about this instead of having to defend why they don't think Roy Moore should drop out of his Senate race.
What happened.
Right.
So here, the first thing we're going to do on this podcast is remind you that despite both of them having behaved inappropriately, one of them is different.
Yes.
And
we're not here to rank, you know, how terrible each different kind of, we're not going to numbers one through three of forcing kissing and forcing pussy
Roy
grabbing
Moore
and
Al Franken.
Whatever. Right, we can't. Because,
as one and two
because,
in their own race.
Right, because Roy Moore is a known pederast.
Right, who has been banned from local malls and has a long, long history of groping and inappropriately dating
and potentially
much younger
attempting
women.
To rape.
And potentially attempting rape, especially because statutory rape is a thing.
Right.
Much younger women.
Right.
And Al Franken is an idiot who is groping women.
Yes.
Now, Another thing I want to point out before we move on is that one of these people also has a voting record that supports women's autonomy and rights and right to equal pay, yes, and things like that. And one of them does not. And I think that when we talk about what the reaction should be to these situations, because we should take all of these situations seriously. Yes. We should discuss all of these situations.
Yes.
Al Franken should have to think to himself, how can I avoid engaging in this behavior in the future? What have I, who do I need to apologize to?
Yep.
You know, who might have been kept held back by my behavior? Like, he should have to think of these things.
Think about things that maybe there isn't photographic proof of that he did over his years.
Think about how he can rectify that behavior.
Right.
But there is a difference between somebody who is, as a representative, not a net loss to women and somebody who absolutely is.
Is.
And that's something I think as we think about how to punish these men, we have to think about.
Yes.
So, you know, first of all, this is a crazy strategy for them to be employing anyway, because there's a Democratic senator in Minnesota. So there's no, they don't get rid of.
Governor.
I mean, governor. Right. So they don't get rid of this.
The Republicans don't gain this seat. Picking anybody up.
No.
Right.
I feel like, and also, the other thing that I feel like is notable only because I have a cousin who is running for governor in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And she's the only Bernie candidate running for governor. But she's one of the most prominent female politicians in Minnesota. And I feel like there is a chance that they have to replace Al Franken with a woman if he resigns.
Yeah.
And that they might have to replace him with a Bernie woman, because that might be who there is to replace him with. And if they do that,
That's maybe
not what they're looking for at this exact moment in time.
Yeah.
So I don't know that strategically this is smart to me anyway, but the Democrats really came down hard on him.
Yeah, they did. And I think just from a political standpoint, they had to be seen as though they were doing this.
Well, and so, also, that's...
And they should have.
That's
what they should do. Right, exactly. Like, you know, and I think that this is a... It's a... In the broader sense, you know, and the House and the Senate had already sort of like started doing this sort of like in the wake of the Roy Moore revelations, and also just sort of like what's going on in society. Both the House and the Senate have already been talking about things that they can do. You know, the Paul Ryan, who is, you know, not necessarily any champion of women, has already started like put into motion like, you know, sexual harassment training that all House members have to do, that they sort of like don't really have to do right now. And I, you know, I have to do that. So they should obviously have to do that. You know, like I, you know, have to do that at my job.
Yeah, I had to go to the one for the underling. I had to go to the assistant sexual harassment training where they tell you how not to be harassed by your boss.
So that is all good. And if it happens because, you know, Al Franken did this, then I mean, sure. Like, let's have that, you know, as a Congress should be having that discussion. Al Franken himself has both, as we mentioned, gave the only correct apology, basically, that anybody has given yet, which was accepted by Ms. Tweeden, who has also said that unless there are other allegations, she does not think that he should have to resign.
No.
It
was one of those weird moments. Like, remember when Hillary Clinton was not the most popular candidate but became the candidate anyway because a lot of media personalities got out and said she was the only candidate?
Right.
It was sort of like that moment where like a lot of angry, like a lot of the media's angry mob got out and said he should resign immediately.
Yeah.
And like without addressing the fact that like I'm okay with him resigning if the president resigns. Like,
well, exactly.
There are people who, but we can't live in a world where only Democrats resign from this behavior when at least on the Democratic side, their actions as representatives of us are not infringing on the rights of women. So it's like, do I think that, like, Anthony Weiner should have had to go to sexual harassment training?
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure.
Clearly.
I mean.
But do I think that his being a representative was in some way misusing the, or misrepresenting the will of the people he represented in terms of how they think women should be treated by policy? No.
Yeah.
I think that there is, you have to, on the political end, examine the political and social impact of what happens when you go, when you get rabid on one of these people.
Right.
And as much as, but that's, the conversation has to happen. There has to be room for it. And we have to agree that some of the people in the conversation are going to say that so-and-so should resign. They're going to say that everyone should resign.
Right.
And some of the people in the conversation are going to be like, what sexual harassment? There's no such thing. But the conversation has to happen. I think the one thing protecting all of these men is the fact that all of them are guilty of this.
Sure.
I was saying to everyone who would listen this week that, like, tell me, find me a male member of the Senate who's not potentially sexually.
Well, I know that's
women.
What you said. Like, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I mean,
yeah, like,
show me
Al Franken, and I raise you like a Mike Lee or somebody who's creepy as fuck.
And a lot of a lot of the media was out there looking for women who have worked for Al Franken to, you know, get them to tell their sordid stories. And at
least
any, there aren't any, because like this is not what, since he sort of like got this job, and this again, like, don't want to make it sound like, oh, well,
no,
he was a comedian, like that he should have been doing this, but like Al Franken has not apparently, as we've found out this week, made a habit of doing these types of things to the people, to the women that work for him.
No, he,
this is a man
who literally stopped making jokes for six years so that people would take him seriously.
Right, exactly. But I have a feeling that if you want to start like polling every single lady staffer on the Hill, you're gonna find some stories, and I don't think Mitch McConnell wants to hear the stories.
No, that's what I think is gonna, that's why I thought it was so interesting that so many people came out and immediately demanded Franken resign.
Right.
Because I was like, you guys are playing with fire.
Right, exactly.
Like, not only because a lot of you are harassing women.
Well, part of the reason that she came out and wrote this story and released this photograph was because Franken had just fairly recently on the Senate floor came out so hard against against Roy Moore and sort of like what's going on with, powerful men in society.
Yeah.
And so
she was trying to call out hypocrisy. The
same thing happens when, you know, anybody does this, basically. Like, the same thing happened to George Takei. You know, George Takei came out against all of these guys, and all of a sudden, you know, some guy that he had done it to, 30 years ago was out and was like, hey, guys. So it's like, you sort, and that's not to say that we shouldn't hear everyone's story. I mean, like, if you have a story about one of these guys, then tell it. I don't care. But I mean, like, you risk having it told by coming out so strongly against Al Franken, I think, probably.
Well, I also think that there is maybe, like, I think that there's a phenomenon that I've been referring to as Ta-Nehisi Coatsing.
Yes.
That is a phenomenon of accidentally creating a scandal about something where you just wanted to make a point that is a fair point.
Sure.
You know, Ta-Nehisi Coates came out very strongly against Sanders because of a comment that Sanders had made about reparations.
Yeah.
And it was a fair discussion to have, absolutely, and it was a fair point to make.
Yeah.
But it was an academic point. It wasn't relevant to the political conversation.
Right.
And it got kind of, he got swooped up in this huge scandal because it was right before all the Southern primaries, and it was right before African-American voters were going to have their first sort of, you know, introduction to Bernie Sanders.
Right.
And it kind of colored the whole conversation in the Southern primaries.
Right.
Which, as we know, are way too decisive.
Yeah.
But as much as I don't blame Ta-Nehisi Coates for trying to have that conversation.
Right, of course.
But I also think that he was maybe naive about when he chose to have it and how he chose to have it.
Yes.
And I think maybe, he didn't know. So we maybe couldn't have asked more of him, but we can certainly be like, now you should be making a better decision the next time this comes up.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what's going to happen with a lot of these cases where I'm sure this woman did not think that this story was going to become the touchstone of avoiding Roy Moore that it was.
Right.
But she, and she should obviously tell the story, and we should listen to the story, and those things are all true. But I think there's going to be a lot of accusations that the women who are making them don't realize are going to catch fire and have consequences in the way that they do, because this is a new arena for us to be discussing this.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years ago, no one would have ever picked up on a paper about reparations.
Right.
We would have just been like, nah, that old chestnut that is an academic point that no one cares about. It became a tangible point because someone like Sanders was in the race, and because we had our first black president, and it was a moment where that suddenly became a tangible point, and all of a sudden, this thing that was supposed to be sort of like a thoughtful thing about whatever kind of blew out of proportion and blew into this larger conversation that was not the conversation he was even trying to start.
Right.
And that's what's going to happen a few times here, so we have to just sort of like know that that's going to happen a few times.
Yeah.
In the same way that we have to know that in a presidential year, some people are always going to vote differently than we think they should, and we have to factor that in when we decide who's going to vote how.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Some people are going to vote for third parties regardless of what you say and do, and even if you think they shouldn't.
Yeah.
But, like, you have to kind of play the long game. You have to think, how is this contributing to the larger conversation, and how can we be smart about the smaller conversation while we have the larger conversation?
Right. Yeah.
So that's, and the one thing that we will have with the Al Franken situation is lots of jokes.
That's right. Because
as SNL has already taken him on.
Yeah, just because he came from SNL didn't mean that they were going to leave him alone.
No.
Because they
but also, I feel like SNL did it well
they
enough.
Did it right.
Because
yeah.
Michael Che, it was during Weekend Update, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And Michael Che said, and without even looking, you can bet that President Trump called out Al Franken and not Roy Moore, who's accused of way worse, by the way. But Franken's a liberal and Trump and Moore are conservatives. And in this country, everybody has to pick a side. Except for me. I think they're all bitches.
Nice. Yeah.
Because, again,
and that's a fair point, too.
Yeah.
You can think that they're all bitches if you want.
That's the thing that I encourage us all to do.
Right?
Instead of just thinking about this as political pot shots,
right.
We have to think, A, about the political reality of where we are. And we also have to think, well, they're all dicks.
Right. Were we thinking otherwise?
I mean,
was that a thing that was happening?
Well, I feel like there's sort of this incentive in the rhetoric to like pick sides, and you're either a hypocrite or you're not. And you know what? You can think that Al Franken should not resign and also think that he was being a fucking dick.
Right, exactly.
Like, you know, like you can think that Roy Moore should not be running and also think that he's a dick. You can think he is running and think he's a dick, but I would say that that's a harder position to maintain.
I would too. We're going to get to Kay Ivey in a little bit. She's trying to maintain
I don't think
she's doing a very good job of it.
It's not working. One thing that's been interesting in all of this is Kirsten Gillibrand's reactions to this and the larger conversation she's accidentally sparked about whether Bill Clinton should have resigned.
And this has fascinated me because, like, initially I thought that she maybe bungled this a little bit, but as I have sat with it and also seen the responses from the few Clintonites that decided to get involved, I really feel like maybe she's onto something.
Listen, Brent's slowly convincing me that she's actually a secret genius. Right. I should say for context that I earlier this week had a conversation with my mother where she was like angry that Gillibrand was being so aggressive in pursuing Franken in a way that she felt like was destructive to the sort of Democratic party. And I was like, listen, Kirsten Gillibrand she's small, she's blonde, she's pretty, and she's young. And she has to live in the Senate, where she is treated like shit daily by all these disgusting, lecherous men who mansplain to her and condescend to her and don't listen to her. And, you know, because of that, you know, I've talked a lot about how I admire her kind of nagging spirit. Because the way she gets stuff done, and she does get stuff done, is nagging the shit out of everybody.
She's been really one of the more effective, senators that we have.
But I think that in her case in particular, instead of reading too much into what the party as a whole says, because Gillibrand says this, we have to realize that she has to come out strong against this kind of behavior to protect herself.
Right.
To protect herself from the Democratic men who condescend to her, from the Republican men who are lecherous and gross to her, and are definitely condescending to her, and to, in general, a society that does not give her a fair voice in a lot of these conversations. Yeah. And so in her situation in particular, because she's really in the hot seat.
Yeah.
I feel like she has to come out against all of them. And when I said that, my mom was like, you know, you're right. Her own work environment is so affected by how she reacts to this, you know, to these scandals, and her, not just her work environment, but the way in which she's able to change the culture of her work environment is affected by what she says right now publicly.
Yeah.
So
when I also think, and I think to, you know, going one step, you know, further in that regards, just sort of like politically what her brand is as well, just sort of like besides, you know, her own personal work environment, but also, you know, her whole thing is she's, you know, she's started this off the sidelines thing. She's raised, you know, tens of millions of dollars for like new women candidates who are running for office, like up and down ballots everywhere. She also has made sexual harassment a huge platform of hers long before any of this conversation started anyway. Like, she sort of is the voice on this to a certain degree, you know, so it makes sense for her.
She's also one of the only, like, not senior, because she's not the senior senator from New York, but more senior young female members of the Senate.
Sure, right.
There, you know, there are some younger women and newer women who've come in, the Kamala Harris of Harrises of the world.
Yeah.
And Kirsten Gillibrand has been there a while. She has some legislative wins under her belt.
Yep.
She has a lot of heat on her because people are talking about her 2020 prospects. Yep. She has the platform to do this and also is still being affected by it in a way that a lot of, you know, that I would guess Dianne Feinstein, as the oldest member of the Senate, is just being treated like she's an irrelevant oldster and not being harassed daily. But I could be wrong. She's probably been harassed most of her time in the Senate.
Yeah.
So what could be different now? But I mean, to have a sort of young voice talking about this in the Senate is important.
Yeah.
And she has been that voice.
Yeah. But, you know, what she specifically
The preamble
is
because she made a bold move.
She made a bold move this week because she was doing an interview with a podcast, a New York Times podcast, and she was asked You know, she was asked whether President Clinton should have resigned over the Monica Lewinsky scandal, and she said, yes, I think that is the appropriate response.
And
she,
all
she,
hell
right,
broke.
Right. She sort of like quickly pivoted and said things have changed today, and I think under those circumstances, there should have been a very different reaction. And I think in light of this conversation, we should have a very different conversation about President Trump and a very different conversation about allegations against him. So she quickly sort of
pivoted
like
to Trump.
Moved to Trump, but the Clinton world was
lost
not
their fucking
happy.
Minds.
Yeah.
Because you know they're, like, sycophants. They right. can't hear things about anyone.
No, they can't.
So there's been some speculation about right. whether this was an intentional misstep or whether she misspoke or whether she intended it to be taken that
right.
way or what the point of all
right.
this was. And Brent is slowly convincing me that this was not a colossal political misstep. I get that it was point-wise.
Right.
I think it's a fair point.
Right.
I think that... politically, I was in the camp of this is a
yeah.
colossal misstep.
Well, I was too.
And Brent's slowly moving me away.
Until the responses came out, which I feel like
yeah.
proved their tone deafness to the whole thing. Because granted, the Clintons did not get involved, and their reps did not issue
They're
statements
too smart
or anything
to
like
wade
that.
Into this, I
that
think.
Bill Clinton is not trying to step back into relitigation of
Monica
what
Lewinsky.
Happened with Monica
no.
Lewinsky. He didn't want to talk about it at the time. He certainly doesn't want to talk about it now.
No.
So, and neither does Hillary Clinton, let's face it. So, the only person who really actually did say anything was a longtime Hillary Clinton aide.
Philip Raines.
Philip Raines, who you've probably heard of. I mean, he's been in the sort of like Clinton sphere
forever. Yeah, we've talked
forever.
About him before.
We've talked about him before. And he tweeted, he said, Ken Starr spent $70 million on a consensual blowjob. Senate voted to keep President Clinton, but not enough for you, Senator Gillibrand? Question mark. Over 20 years, you took the Clintons' endorsements, money, and seat. Hypocrite. Interesting strategy for 2020 primaries. Good luck. Best of luck. And the thing that I took away from that, and Paul Begala retweeted this, by the
obviously,
way.
Obviously, because he's in love with the Clintons.
Right, exactly. But the first sentence here, Ken Starr spent $70 million on a consensual blowjob.
Yeah.
And I feel like that right there... shows exactly what she is sort of like the ideas that she is trying to shop around
yeah.
to everyone right now and that women everywhere can relate to in the sense that, no, Bill Clinton didn't necessarily rape Monica Lewinsky to give him a blowjob, but as the leader of the free world and a man in power, did he use that power similar to Harvey Weinstein
right.
and some of these other guys that we're now talking about? To get what he wanted from a younger, you know, person who worked for him, woman who worked for him.
Yeah. And the answer is yes.
And the answer is obviously yes. Well, and I feel like they don't get
yeah.
it because they're so mad that she had the balls to say that he should have resigned. And like, you know, maybe she should have, maybe she shouldn't have, but like, don't prove her point for her. Or do prove her point. I'm glad they're proving her point because
good,
it sort of like it makes her look less
this is
of an idiot.
So on brand for them because they love to condescendingly explain. They love to mansplain stuff.
To
as
mansplain.
I was saying earlier, they love to oldsplain stuff.
Yeah.
They were oldsplaining
because
all over
Hillary
the primaries.
Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright were both
oldsplaining up
mansplaining
a storm.
To us. Yeah. But they were, oldsplaining
they were
as
oldsplaining.
You like to say. But I mean, you know, this, it's no surprise that they did this. And I feel like just sort of proves that they are from a different generation. It proves that they don't get it.
Yeah.
It proves that they don't see like the, you know, like social winds that are blowing
yeah.
right now. Like they
like
just,
once
they,
again.
They are a dying brand.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And if the 2016 election didn't prove it. And then this does.
Sure.
I mean, this is
on brand for them for 20
well,
in
sure.
the 2016 election.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
As I was saying to Brent, I think the thing that younger women can take away from this criticism of Bill Clinton's behavior that they aren't seeing is that no matter whether or not you have consented to a sexual act with your boss,
right.
you are always making a career decision and not a personal decision.
Correct.
Monica Lewinsky was not making a personal decision to blow Bill Clinton. She was making a career choice.
Right.
Now, did she necessarily even in her head term it as a career choice? Nobody will ever know.
No.
But it doesn't matter because she was not going to marry Bill Clinton and have a life with him.
Right.
He was the president and he was already married. What she was going to do was have to make a calculation about whether, you know, taking him up on this offer was going to be beneficial to her in the future. And the only route, the only route that could have been beneficial to was her career route. So she made a career choice. And those are the different, like, not understanding the difference between something being consensual and being forced to make a sexual choice for your career is what
the
problem is here.
That choice that she made only ruined one person's life.
And it was hers.
And it was hers. And it wasn't Bill Clinton's.
There was also no right choice for her to make.
Right.
It was going to ruin her life regardless. That's the problem with a situation like this. Now, is this the same thing as him chatting up teenagers in malls?
No.
No, of course not. And that's, we can know that he did something wrong and still know that other people are doing different wrong things.
Yeah.
So we don't have to, it doesn't always have to be, it's not a competition.
Right. No, it's not. And I do feel like, you know, I get like at least, well, and you and I were both sort of like thinking that it was stupid earlier in the week. You know, it potentially makes it a little bit harder for her to fundraise from some of these people who have, you know, the Clintons, whether we like it or not, and we certainly don't like it, still are sort of, you know, hold the keys in a lot of respects. So, you know, in that way, maybe not a great answer from her. But like, I also think it sort of like potentially endears her to a different group of people who maybe were sort of not necessarily aware of her.
Maybe I think give her access to some of that sweet grassroots money that Bernie Sanders was raising by the forkful.
That's right. Yeah. So I don't know. I think it probably remains to be seen.
Yeah. It's a gamble.
It's a gamble. I'm here for it, not because I necessarily agree for her, but but like I'm here for it in the like the ballsiness, like go for it of it. Is that a thing? Go for it.
I think so. Yeah. Well, also, I think that we feel compelled to, and we were just doing it seconds ago, to make some excuses for men who are behaving this way just because, like, the world would come crumbling down if we didn't, because literally all men are being lecherous creeps some of the time.
Right.
I admire anyone who's willing to be ballsy enough to just be like, I'm going to go whole hog on the most powerful man's, you know, credibility, and I'm not sorry.
Yeah.
She's been consistent.
Yeah, she is.
You know?
Yeah.
And just as I don't necessarily think anyone should resign over a sex scandal that's been brought up for explicitly political reasons, I also don't think that she shouldn't be able to walk around claiming that they should.
I agree.
I'm excited that someone's doing that, too.
Same. Yeah.
I do want to say that nobody should resign until the equivalent Republican resigns.
Or the worst Republican.
The worst Republican. Like, I don't want to see another David Vitter, Elliot Spitzer situation.
Right, exactly.
Where both of them are just sleeping with prostitutes, but one of them gets to keep
it,
a shot.
I was going
to
say, we've said it a million times on this podcast. Democrats everywhere have been resigning for sexless scandals, while Republicans have been...
are having graphic, like, scary sex scandals where they're impregnating women and forcing them to have abortions and all sorts of crazy shit. They're not resigning. No. They're not sorry at all.
No. Well, they ask forgiveness from God.
Yeah. It's, yeah. And Democrats aren't able to. We don't have access to God in the same way.
That's right. No.
It's tough.
Yeah. Kay Ivey.
The governor of Alabama, once again, the replacement for the love gov.
That's right. Yes.
She
doesn't have any reason to disbelieve the women who are
accusing Roy Moore.
Right. But she also... Right, exactly. She just doesn't give a shit because she is going to cast her ballot on December 12th, and she is going to cast it for the nominee of their party. Notice that, and that's exactly what she said. Yeah. She didn't say Roy Moore.
Nope.
She said from the nominee. She basically did an entire interview with like Alabama.com or something and never said Roy Moore once. Actually she did. She said it once. But like, it is rich to be able to hold in your head that the person that you're talking about, the nominee of your party, you know, was...
A pederast.
Right, exactly.
And he's just a pederast. We don't have to qualify that.
No, we don't. He was.
He's literally a pederast.
Right. What, the 14-year-old, and along with 9 other women.
Yeah, it's not like one... and not women who knew each other.
Right, exactly.
Just rando women.
Yes, exactly.
The Republican Party is waiting for the court to litigate it. They're not going to make any decisions until the court tells us to.
No, until somebody proves that he actually did this by... What?
Well, there's no way to prove it, and that's why they'll never have to denounce him.
Exactly. Yeah.
She does think that the timing of these announcements is a little curious.
It's not.
Here's the thing. It's not curious when somebody who's in the public eye suddenly has accusations that are also in the public eye come out. Before this, why would we care what the accusations against Roy Moore were?
Right.
He was not someone we knew about.
And we're also living in a time where this is what we're talking about.
Also, so, I would contend that the people of Alabama should have cared about this and chose not to.
Well.
Like, yeah. It wasn't our responsibility as Californians to care about this years ago, because what the fuck did we know about what was going on in Alabama or care? But it was the responsibility of the people of Alabama to know and do something about it. And they chose not to. So now we have to be incensed.
Yeah.
I would rather they prevent me from having to know any of this.
Yeah.
By just dealing with it.
Yeah. But the Republican Party of Alabama has also announced this week that they are not pulling their support.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in it.
They're in
Roy Moore.
Yeah. Well, they're waiting for court to tell them that they have to pull their support.
It's more important to have a Republican. It doesn't matter whether he's a pederast or not.
Also, I would contend that Roy Moore isn't even a good Republican because he's like a lunatic.
Well, yeah.
He's not like
a
Republican.
Steve Bannon person.
Yeah. He's not like a Republican in the way that like scandal-free Republicans like Jeff Flake are Republicans.
Yeah. Well, and that's why people like Jeff Flake are the people who are telling him that he should leave.
Exactly.
Because they don't want any part of him.
No, exactly. But this, like, we're talking about a man who knows almost nothing about policy, but knows a lot about like racism and shit.
That's
you know?
Yes. Like, and the Ten Commandments.
And the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Very familiar with the Ten Commandments.
Being removed from the bench.
Yeah.
Which
over that. Yeah.
Right. Which he was twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's not that familiar with the law.
No. But exactly. As a judge.
Right.
But it may not shock you to learn that this is just a drag on the whole party.
Oh my God. This is getting complicated for them.
It's already starting to complicate it for them.
Yeah.
Because there are primaries either already happening for races that are coming up or, you know, or Democrats are sort of like doing a decent enough job of tying the entire GOP brand to Roy Moore. And that's helpful in some
swing state races that are coming up.
That's right. There are already, you know, there's races in Virginia. There's races in Indiana.
Ohio, Arizona, and South Carolina have races.
Right,
all
exactly.
Swingy.
Yeah.
I mean, not South Carolina, I guess.
Right. And Democrats are using it. They're using it to fundraise. They are using it to sort of, you know, just, like I said, broadly tie all. If they can get out there and sort of like have Roy Moore be the face of everyone who's running in 2018, like that's basically what they're trying to do right now.
Well, and it's also, they're using it in races against some well-known incumbents that are in Democratic states and, you know, like the Daryl Issas of the world.
Yeah, because Daryl Issas doesn't.
More.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and if they can successfully do this, it would be a huge win because the latest polling on this shouldn't shock you. It's not great.
A lot of people think he should drop out.
Yeah, exactly. 63% of registered voters nationwide say Moore should drop out, and just 23% say he should stay in. But among Republicans, it's much closer. 42% say Moore should drop out. I'm surprised that's actually leading. And 38%
say
that he should stay in. But
to me, the more concerning figure is the Republican figure, because if it's one voters at large, who they don't care what voters at large think.
Right.
But they should care that a majority of their own party thinks
he should drop
out.
Right, because they're going to have to nominate people out of primaries that if they are sort of Roy Moore lovers are not going to do so great in a general election.
No, no. And they're either going to have to choose to eat a Senate seat essentially or risk losing other, like they're going to have to eat something.
That's right.
Yeah. Speaking of judges.
Yes.
This is our favorite story.
Favorite
of the week.
News story of the week.
Yeah. This is the best thing that's ever happened to humans. Yeah. Brett Joseph Talley is a Trump nominee for the federal bench in the U.S. District Court in Alabama.
Yeah.
Again, another Alabama story.
Yeah. Completely unrelated.
And this guy has a lot of non-qualifications.
That's right.
He's never been a judge.
No.
He's not an accomplished anything.
No. He's one of Trump's four nominees that he has nominated to judgeships who have been given a, quote, not qualified rating by the American Bar Association, which has not given that rating in 10 years.
Yeah.
Since our last Republican president.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
They're famous for that.
Yeah.
So this guy, he has never tried a case.
No.
He's a fledgling lawyer, as everyone's describing him.
Mm-hmm.
He was a speechwriter for Mitt Romney.
Yep.
He is the husband to the chief of staff for the White House counsel, but he doesn't have enough of an understanding of the law to know that he was supposed to disclose that on his Senate questionnaire.
Right.
But he's
more
also,
more importantly,
author of horror books and
the
pièce de résistance. An amateur ghost hunter.
That's right.
That's right. He's a hobbyist ghost hunter.
Yeah.
Who's never tried a case.
Yeah.
Yes. That's almost exactly who should be on the federal bench in Alabama.
Right.
That's
almost
the perfect example of exactly what Alabama is and is aspiring to be.
That's right.
We did not make those last two up.
No, we did not.
In 2009 and 2010, he was a member of the Tuscaloosa Paranormal Research Group.
Mm.
It's a volunteer operation that started in the early 2000s and holds all-night vigils using infrared cameras around abandoned places.
That's right.
Plantation
mansions, abandoned hospitals.
Other large buildings that have nothing in them.
The guy who runs the group, David Higdon, said he was a real help. He was quiet and real smart. And then he said, we try and do everything scientific. It's just a bunch of scientists. Just
scientists, amateur ghost hunters.
That's right. Yeah. They're not scientists, though.
Just handheld sensoring and infrared cameraing all over the abandoned plantations of the South.
Yeah, during these all-night affairs, Tally apparently helped carry and unpacked cases filled with thermal sensors, infrared cameras, tripods, and K2 meters, handheld electromagnetic field devices, which are
what K2 meters are.
Oh, got it, right. Which are favored by paranormal investigators. And he apparently helped, you know, monitor all these vigils.
Investigations, that's as right. they like to call yes. them. Uh-huh. He was also writing horror fiction at the time.
At the same time.
He wrote a book called That Which Should Not Be.
Mm, yes.
And it won a Horror Writers Association Bram Stoker Award.
Yeah, well, it was a semifinalist. It didn't win.
Oh, it was a semifinalist. Okay.
Settle down.
Oh, right. Sorry. Misread that. Thank God. There was a Q&A with him at the Unlocked Diary website, and the interview wrote that the book has, quote, awesome-tastic gooiness oozing from every page to where you will be licking it off your fingers and savoring it for days to come. That is what a bizarre thing for a grown person, presumably, to have written on paper.
That's right. He also, in 2012, wrote a book that he co-authored with Higdon, the guy who runs this paranormal group, called Haunted Tuscaloosa, which was a short book of stories about ghostly doings in Alabama.
Yeah, this is while he was working as Mitt Romney's speechwriter.
Right, he was writing this at the same
by
time.
By day, Mitt Romney speechwriter. By night, writer of short horror about
haunted Tuscaloosa.
Haunted Tuscaloosa.
That's right.
Anyway, in a recent hearing that the Judiciary Committee held, Jeff Flake asked him about his background as a horror fiction writer.
Yeah.
He said that's an interesting background for a judge. And Tally said he would try to draw on his horror background when writing legal opinions. He said, well, Senator, I would hope that would at least make some interesting opinions, and I will try to sneak in some horror references if I'm fortunate enough to be confirmed. We don't need him to do that.
No, we don't.
By the way, he should not think that that's a favor he's offering to the American
people.
That's
not why we've asked him to do this.
No, his awesome-tastic gooiness is not what we're looking for in our legal opinions, even in Alabama.
Correct. Yes. He once recalled the intensity he felt on a night not long ago when he had an oh my gosh moment in an old hospital when a, quote, full-blown shadow person crossed his path in a basement corridor. Dun, dun, dun.
Drama.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a man who believes he's interacted with shadow people.
Yeah.
And is also trying to be a federal judge with no legal experience.
That's right.
Two things that should be concerning. And yet,
we'll probably be confirmed.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Trump is now back to theater because he's trying to distract all of us from everything being about to blow up. And is trying to urge Hillary Clinton to run
against him.
And I only put this on because I wanted to point out that Trump is good at this.
I was going to say, this. He's on to something
here. He's on to something
if
here.
If he can get her to somehow do this again, he could be the president again. I know.
He said, she just can't stop, which is so good for the Republican Party. He's not wrong.
No.
And then, because
she proved that she's the only person that can lose to Donald Trump, so she could do it again.
Exactly. It was because she had interviews on Friday talking about Roy Moore and Russian interference. Stop going to interviews. Literally, stay home and walk in the woods or whatever you do.
That's right.
Yeah. Talk on the phone to your friends.
Yeah. But he called her the worst and biggest loser of all time. He said she just can't stop, which is so good for the Republican Party. Hillary, get on with your life and give it another try in 3 years. He's right about everything in there, except I don't want her to try again in 3 years. But I mean, you know, she really just can't stop.
No,
I mean,
she can't.
Not wrong.
She can't be stopped.
She can't be stopped.
But I feel like, for me, it's important to note that the only area where he has his, like, lizard brain leads him towards truth is in this competitive thing he has going on with Hillary
That's
Clinton.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And I just wanted to do a quick follow-up because you know how I love to talk about sports on this podcast when they somehow, you know...
And I let you as long as I don't have to contribute.
I know. Great. So, well, we talked about this last week because we briefly updated you about what was going on while Trump was in Asia last week.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things was that he was talking to President Xi of China about getting the UCLA basketball players released because three UCLA basketball players over there, they had played a game in China and three of them apparently stole or were accused of stealing a bunch of stuff from like a Louis Vuitton store there, and they were still there. They'd been there for a while, actually. I think they'd been there for like 10 days or something like that, and they faced jail time.
Right.
So Trump tried to get them to be able to be released and come back. And this week, they were. Yep. They came back home this week.
His first success.
Right, exactly, yeah. So he, they held a press conference, the three of them, where they did thank him for allowing them to be able to come back home. But, hilariously, LaVar Ball, who is, if you follow sports kind of at all, but also specifically in Los Angeles, they're like a Los Angeles family, and they're a basketball family. Like, all the kids, there's multiple brothers. They've gone to UCLA. One was drafted by the Lakers, and he is like a very bombastic character. Like, he is a person who has like said something to the effect last year that like it, like UCLA would, and they were ranked like two or three at the time, but they would be doing better like if they didn't have so many slow white players. Like, I mean, like,
oh, he's
like,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So he's this guy.
Yeah.
So he was asked at one point, like, whether he was thankful that Trump helped get his son, because his son was one of them, to come back. And his response was, who? Like, in response to, like, Trump.
Donald Trump.
Basically, like, Trump, I don't know Trump. And so, Trump.
That incensed him.
Incensed him.
Brent, everyone is supposed to know who he is. He's the president. What does he have to do to get the attention of LaVar Ball?
Well, and obviously, LaVar Ball knows good and well who he is. But it was, so he took to Twitter, as he does, and this is so good. He said, now that the three basketball players are out of China and saved from years in jail, LaVar Ball, the father of LiAngelo, is unaccepting of what I did for his son, and that shoplifting is no big deal. I should have left them in jail.
Oh, my God. Brent, they didn't kiss the ring. They were supposed to know that they owed their lives to Donald Trump, American hero.
I just love that, though. It's like, yeah, just fucking leave them in a Chinese jail. They're American citizens. Who gives a rip? You know, like, it's just like...
Well, no. And also that he went through the trouble of asking about it when he thought that they would be appropriately respectful of the choice.
Right.
Like, if they, he wanted thanks.
Right,
he didn't
want
to actually help them.
Yeah.
He wanted them to thank him.
Right.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. Yikes.
That's the president.
That's it. There he is.
There he is. May be back next week if something exciting happens.
Right.
We may not if nothing exciting happens.
Tax bill,
yeah,
perhaps?
If that or just
well,
any kind of exciting. It's not gonna
or
happen.
Or like if it's we know what's gonna happen.
Yeah.
Like if we can see that it's gonna go down in
exactly.
flames, we might really relish bringing you a podcast
yeah.
post Thanksgiving. But it is post Thanksgiving and Lila's traveling, so it's,
yeah.
I'm
we
going
might
to a Rams game.
Be tired.
Sports.
Ugh. A game,
so,
a Rams game.
Yeah.
Wait, where do the Rams play?
At the Coliseum. Where the,
is that where USC
where,
plays?
Yeah, it's where USC plays. They're getting a new stadium built.
Oh,
obviously.
I drove past it the other day,
yeah,
and I thought, I wonder if they're building a new stadium, because I saw a stadium that was being built next to the Coliseum, a place I've never been.
Is it being built? Well, it's in Inglewood, so I don't know if it's that.
There's something built. USC is building a new stadium, I think.
Maybe.
There's a stadium next to the Coliseum that's being built.
That sounds right.
That's the answer.
Yeah.
That's what we know.
Yeah.
All right, well, they're the Rams. Go
Rams.
Rams.
Go Rams.
So
go,
they're here.
Go sports. They're here.
What's the other one that's here?
The Chargers.
How did we end up with two?
We went from zero to two in 1 year.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Do you think we could give the Dodgers back?
No. Everybody likes the Dodgers.
Damn it. In any case, that's the news this week.
There it is.
Happy
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Travel safely and diligently. Try to walk at a reasonable pace in the airport because people behind you might want you to. And we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.